This is a podcast on health and social care with Neil Stewart in conversation with Dr. Johnny Marshall, the Director of Policy at the NHS Confederation. If we look at realignment of services, a lot of this is meant to be driven by commissioning. And so at one level, you could imagine a Milton Keynes with a very high birth rate and a particular population profile having a very different commissioning proposition from parts of the Lancashire coast, which have a very high concentration of retirement and care of the elderly needs. You could imagine a place like Manchester perhaps commissioning a lot of its care services from bits of Lancashire. Do you see this happening on a large scale, or particular groups and areas, as we've had the difficulty up till now, you know, whole regions trying to decide whether or not they'll have a specialist facility in their hospital, or whether they'll rely on something in Birmingham or in Newcastle. At one point, you know, Scotland had no transplant facilities and was reliant on Newcastle. The controversy at that time was a considerable fury. But do you think the realignment of services at that national level will still be driven forward by this more local input, or that it risks being reversed?
So I think this is one of the really tough dilemmas. For many services that we offer, probably the majority of services that we offer, if you're looking at commissioning for a population of 100,000, 200,000 for general sort of elective care, frail, older sort of populations, that still makes sense. And how you do that should be very much based on the individual needs of that community, and that will vary quite significantly. And therefore, you do need that flexibility. It's not a one-size-fits-all approach. But then there'll be bigger sort of populations around which healthcare need makes more sense to think about it outside of just your own organisational commissioning boundaries. So if we're looking at paediatric cardiac surgery, there's a sense of getting the quality right means we need professionals who are doing the procedures frequently enough to get really good at them. And the evidence teaches us that means they need to be doing a certain number, therefore that defines the number of units. They will not always be on your doorstep close to home. But if we don't listen to what people are saying, then we end up with the challenge, it's not on my doorstep. And I think what people are genuinely saying is, when I'm in a paediatric cardiology surgical unit, I feel detached from home. It's scary. I would really quite like still to be connected to my whole sort of social support. So how can we think about creating the right sort of environments, even if it is further away from home, that make people feel they're at home, feel supported, feel part of the community that's wrapped around them? Technology may have a role to play in that. I think we've just got to get into the heads of why people feel like that, because I'm sure everyone would want the very best operation for their child that had a significant heart abnormality. No one's saying they don't want the very best. What they're saying, but remember, we are people, we have a family, we have social support, and that's as integrally important part of this as the technical procedure.
Yeah, but people are willing to travel if they think they can get their treatment more quickly. Do you think that's recognised? Or do you think people are more wedded to having their family and social support around them? So not long-term conditions, but people who are looking for operations and interventions and the end of pain or the alleviation of pain?
Yeah, I think that people want different things from their healthcare experience. And sometimes access and expediency is put above sort of quality and ultimate outcome. Partly because, and this might be a good thing, partly because people just genuinely think they're going to get great care all the time. Which is quite a positive thing. It's quite a high level of trust, but also, I guess, a sense of dependency, and actually people thinking, what is in my best interest, not just in terms of access and expediency, but ultimately achieving the outcome. I think that's the way in which we can help people make more informed decisions by increasing their understanding. So let me give you an example around that. One is around stenting in stable angina. where people have a little stent put in the coronary artery to increase the blood flow to the heart muscle. There is a process by which, having had the angiogram, we know whether that decision is actually going to be a life-saving one for about 20% of people, or whether it's actually one that just helps to control the symptoms for 80% of people. And some of the evidence coming out shows if you have that discussion and an informed discussion about people with people about this, they start to make different decisions about which intervention they would want, guided by their understanding of what they want, rather than guided by us as professionals and what we can do. So I think how we inform people about some of these things more accurately actually will enable them to make better decisions. And I think that's what we need to do more of from a healthcare perspective.
In looking at commissioning, I think it'd be fair to say that a lot of people involved in commissioning are still looking over their shoulder, worrying that any unintended consequences from commissioning could impact on major trusts and services that there is access to locally. Just to follow your stent example, can you see commissioning where, you know, for the 20% that need the intervention now, there needs to be a facility within a reasonable distance that's high quality, but for the other 80%, those services which you might be able to deliver over a slightly longer period of time could also be delivered or sourced from a much bigger geographical area, and therefore not necessarily on the patch or some of the ideas that were behind the original District General Hospital idea, that everything was within reasonable reach. Do you think people would accept that?
I think if you start from the needs of individual people, building that into populations, then you can work out that for this sort of the acute heart attack situation where stenting is fantastic, that's not the stable angina example I gave, you want that to be available fairly instantly within a certain sort of distance. You then would look at, well, how many people needs, with the 20% of stable angina, need to have the coronary artery stenting within a longer period of time, but actually it's still really valuable to them. And how many of those 80% now choose to have the coronary artery stenting or not? If you build it from that basis, then you can see, right, from my population, this is what I need. Now, no CCG sort of commissioning population really sits in isolation of any other. You're then going to need to look at the areas around you to make sense of this. But I think that gives you the best opportunity to strategically look at things. Well, how do we therefore create the best set of services that meet those defined needs? I don't think that's how we do this often enough. We've got to build it up from the individual people. I guess this is the real sort of devolution challenge. If we're devolving from national government to local government local decision making, how far do we keep going down to the individual person, which is where the real devolution, I guess, ends, and making sure that they're contributing to those decisions that make sense for them as part of a wider population.
And just on the realignment of services, I mean, the big problem, which everyone's identified for more than 30 years, and Manchester may be the start of a revolution in that, is that the fiscal incentives, as they say, weren't aligned. And therefore, you know, the effort that was put into creating efficiencies and improvements in one area, those were often not the services and organisations that saw the benefit of them. Do you think that kind of Manchester-type devolution opens the possibilities to get those incentives lined up in the right direction?
I guess the thing that we're going to need to understand from Manchester is, where is the barrier to this around culture and relationships and just different ways of working within the current incentives? And where is this really about the incentives being the barrier to change? And how do we need to move to the right incentive to support that change? So I think that's the real information that we need to learn from places like Manchester. What do we need to change to enable this to happen all over the country? And I think currently there are sufficiently misaligned incentives that make it much more difficult for people to do the right thing in working across those organisational boundaries, because the investment might go into one sector and the financial risk might sit in another sector. And how we get that aligned so everyone is, I guess, winning together rather than creating a win-lose within a health and social care economy, I think that's going to be quite pivotal to sort of to bringing about that sort of integrated service that you're describing.
When companies and businesses merge, one of the big dilemmas they face is, do you move all the people over in all their current posts into a new organisation and then ask them to work out new roles? Or do you specify at the beginning that these are the new roles and you come and apply for them, join them or are transferred to them, so that there is no doubt about the direction of travel? And this is one of the biggest dilemmas in organisation and people change. If you were thinking about how that integration or reintegration, I mean, some of this used to be there before 1974, reorganisations, but how do you think they should approach that dilemma? Because that is going to be a very big challenge.
I think the challenge for the workforce is huge. Having identified the need of the population, the sort of model of care they then need, you need to have the right workforce delivering that. And probably at a time of uncertainty, when we're not quite sure what the answer to that question is, ensuring that we have a workforce that has the right mindset and the right flexibility to be able to be clear as to what the objective is, but to flex the roles across a team in order to work out who's the best person to achieve those objectives, so we can then start to cement the right sort of workforce arrangements around those new models of care, means that at the moment we need flexibility, we need people with the mindset, but also who are empowered at a local level to come up and design some of these new models of care around what represents the greatest value within a health and social care system, not just within your organisation. I think that's really challenging.
Well, when we talk about that devolution, we often do talk about the integration of things that were in the health service, the acute service, with social services. But the big realignment that people want is they want the maximum amount of their healthcare at home, even in the areas where there is quite high levels of dependency, sometimes at end of life care, but often in longer term conditions. So are we really looking at a two-step change, integration of existing services and functions, but actually the second step of going the whole way further to focus on the home and around the individual, and that will be a second level of disruption and challenge?
I think within the new models of care, there's a real opportunity to look at this as coordinating services around the needs of an individual rather than integrating existing service provision. I think there's a danger if we just sort of crash together what we're currently doing, we're not going to see the benefit from it. And perhaps we see that time and time again with technology, which we layer in on top of the existing service, but it never fundamentally changes the service model of the old service, and therefore we never realise the full benefit from it. I think we need to look at coordinated services around the needs of the individuals and what that means for each of us in our part of the health and social care landscape to change the way that we behave to create this service with lots of seams. Because most garments that don't have seams are pretty unattractive, but they're invisible to the person that's using the service. I think that's a different mindset than just integrating existing services. And I think that's one that we need to adopt.
So as these new devolved organisations are created, you would put at the top of the business plan the individual at the centre and try and make all the professionals and managers understand the implications of that. That it's not just integrating what we've got, but it's making and being ready for the move to what people want and need. And that is heavily outside the old acute and even some of the existing nursing and residential structures.
Absolutely. The whole principle of devolution is not just from national government to me, it's all the way down to the individual to then construct things back up again. So I guess the national government looks at it from the right end of the curve, looking down to the individual. But fundamentally, I think from a commissioning perspective, we need to look at the individual's needs and construct the services from left to right, back the other way.
Dr. Johnny Marshall, the Director of Policy at the NHS Confederation, thank you very much for being in conversation with us and looking at the dilemmas that management and policymakers face in the years ahead. Thanks very much.
Pleasure.